Friday night on ESPN, our family movie night feature presentation is Secretariat. It's a great movie, the story of the greatest thoroughbred racehorse ever. Friday night, 8:30 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. And before we start a new hour here, Mike Tannenbaum, you sent me a text saying there's a message you need to deliver. What is going on?
Yeah, big news in the Get Up family. Last night, Darren Lofsky became an uncle, but once he's had their baby girl, congratulations, Dan, you're an uncle.
Well, who had the baby girl?
The Wentzes, Carson Wentz, Hadley.
Tannenbaum. Dropping Tannenbaum.
That's messed up, man.
Congratulations, Arlovsky. Dan, you must be so proud.
It's hard to get me speechless. It's hard to get me speechless without anything to say. I'm glad my hands are off screen, Mr. T. I'm going to get you back for that
one.
Oh,
that's very well played. Okay. And with that thought in mind, let's rack up another hour here on Get Up, because we're getting up with Dak, whose team got better this weekend, but did his leverage get worse once and for all? Is his deal getting done? We're going live to Big D right off the top. Then, he is the most underappreciated great player in sports. I will make my case as to what every team in the league is passing up when they pass on Cam Newton. And then, what is the message the Packers are sending their legendary quarterback, and why in the world are they doing it? We'll talk about all those and more as we get up with you, starting right now. Starts with Get Up and Go. And Jameis Winston officially has a new team. He and the Saints officially agreed on a one-year contract, financial terms not yet released. Winston is expected to split the backup duties with Taysom Hill. We'll talk about it in this hour. I love the move. Elsewhere, the NFL determined Tom Brady did not violate any offseason work rules when he recently tried to enter a Bucs offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich's home. He was going to retrieve a playbook, accidentally entered the wrong house. The league said no harm, no foul. We just talked about this with Woj. Five-star point guard Dacian Nix decommitting from UCLA to sign with the NBA's new G League Pathway program. He is the third very highly touted prospect to join the G League this year. We'll talk about it with Jalen and Jay Will later this hour. And then France has banned all sporting events in the country, including the Tour de France, until at least September. The 2019-20 French soccer season will not be able to resume because of the new restrictions. All right, and then let's work our way to Dallas, where the Cowboys, they've had a very interesting offseason. First, of course, they make the coaching change in January. They don't bring back Jason Garrett after nearly 10 seasons, and they hire Mike McCarthy to take over that job. Meanwhile, they and Dak Prescott have still not come to terms on a long-term contract, Dallas placing the exclusive franchise tag on their quarterback, preventing other teams from signing him. But right now they remain in sort of a standoff on that thing. And then the Cowboys last week made a splash with their first round pick. They take CD Lamb, 17 overall. He is a very highly touted prospect who figures to make their offense very, very good. But that, of course, would involve having a quarterback in the middle of it all. So for more on that, let's bring in the one and only Ed Werder, who's down there with more as always. And so, Ed, as everyone raves about the Cowboys draft, it feels like they have everything in place except the most important thing. What is taking so long with Dak?
Well, first, Mike, we should remember that Dak Prescott is grieving the loss of his brother, Jace, who died just a week ago tomorrow. And as for the contract specifically, I think the disagreement between Dak Prescott and the Cowboys is mostly about the length of the deal. The Cowboys want 5 years. The quarterback wants four. The reality is what's happening here is totally consistent with quarterbacks designated as franchise tag quarterbacks. Now, Dak's the only quarterback in Cowboys history who's been franchise tagged. But in the history of the NFL, there have been seven previous instances where a team has franchise tagged its quarterback. And those quarterbacks getting a long-term deal eventually, you know, of those, one was signed in March. That was Peyton Manning in 2004. But four weren't signed until July, and two were signed in August. So this is not an unusual situation that we're in.
Now, the one thing that might be making it a little more complicated is the coaching change, as we mentioned. So there's going to be a new offense, and there's a lot to learn. But we get that the offseason this year is different than it's ever been with these virtual meetings everyone is having. What impact does all of that, do you think, have on this?
Yeah, there's no question that, you know, Mike McCarthy is a first-year head coach in Dallas. They invested, as you said, a first-round draft choice and a wide receiver in CeeDee Lamb. And under normal circumstances, you know, they would have started their offseason program on the field at the Star 2 weeks ago, and they would have wanted Prescott present to lead the installation of the new offense. And in fact, I've been told that had this been a normal offseason, that Prescott would have been done by now because the Cowboys would have, in fact, felt the pressure of a deadline to allow him to be a part of their off-season work. The leverage that Dak has to withhold services, which he's doing, he's not participating in these virtual workouts, but it's just not the same as not participating when the team is on the field. And so his absence, Greeny, doesn't quite have the same effect. I do think that once the NFL declares that facilities are open and teams can get back to work and gather at their headquarters, then I think that will signify that a deal is forthcoming and Dallas will feel the pressure that they would have felt weeks ago.
That's a really important point. Really well done. Ed, thank you so much, my friend. Great to see you again.
Thanks,
and I
want to
bring Dan Orlovsky in on this because the addition of C.D. Lamb, we were talking about it this morning, and everyone says, wow, their passing game is just going to be dynamite. But you, I know, have some tape that suggests that he's going to have an impact on the running game as well.
Yeah, Greeny, to your point, their passing game is still going to be very good, but the impact on their running game by CeeDee Lamb will be a big deal, and Dak Prescott will be a benefactor, and so will Ezekiel Elliott. If you look at CeeDee Lamb on the right side of the screen here, he's going to be part of a traditional jet motion. This will be something part of the Cowboys offense. Now, I want everyone to see the impact that it has on the defenders with all their eyes on CeeDee Lamb. There's the mesh point right now. Look at the defenders screaming horizontally from the pressure by CeeDee Lamb. And this is where Dak can become part of a runner. Look at the easy hole that it's created for this offense now. People lost out in space. Also easy blocking for these offensive linemen. You tell Dak, get 6 or 7 yards. Make sure you get down, so he's a benefactor of it. And then let's see how it impacts Ezekiel Elliott. There's CeeDee Lamb again, going to go cross the motion for the jet motion again. Look at the mesh point now. The tailback comes back across the field. All the defenders, again, staring at CeeDee Lamb. There's 6 or 7 guys left over there. You think the Cowboys' offensive line is going to like that gashing hole for Ezekiel Elliott? So, yeah, their pass game is going to be great, and CeeDee Lamb is going to be a part of that. But I expect Kellen Moore to implement plays like this with CeeDee Lamb into their offense, and Dak will become more of a runner, and then Ezekiel Elliott will be just as much of a benefactor to the run game as Dak is in their pass game.
That's really interesting. And again, if you're with us earlier this morning, Field Yates told us that Dak, with the addition of CeeDee Lamb, figures to maybe be the third best fantasy quarterback this coming season. Of course, he needs to get signed. All right, get me Mike Tannenbaum back. I want to go through a couple of other stories here with my general manager, Mr. T. Let's go to Chicago. Do you expect the Bears to exercise Mitchell Trubisky's fifth-year option?
Absolutely not. If that email is drafted, I'm going to Chicago. I'm breaking quarantine. I am deleting the email. Can't happen. He is not good enough, Greeny. They have a quarterback in Nick Foles that has started 6 playoff games. Last year, Mitch Trubisky was 30th in the league in average yards per attempt. It's not good enough. Don't exercise the option.
Okay, I like that. Let's go to the next one. What challenges will Joe Burrow face learning the Bengals offense virtually?
I think he'll be able to learn the offense, Greeny. I think there's a much greater intangible here, which is his teammates, getting to know the people in the building, the equipment manager, the trainer, getting to know the coaches, getting an apartment in Cincinnati. I know it sounds simplistic, but this is the first time these guys actually have jobs, and to acclimate themselves to a new area is going to take some time, and you can't do that virtually.
And then one more for you here. This is the controversial one. What did you think of the Packers' decision to move up in the first round and take Jordan Love?
It's terrible. It's not the time or the place. I understand quarterback depth, but Aaron Rodgers is going to be the starter. You've talked about Greeny for a couple of years. You needed a right tackle to replace Brian Bulaga. You needed another receiver. They didn't get either of those done. And because of the contract situation of Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love can't play for at least until 2022. So it was the right idea. It was the wrong time and the wrong place.
Yes, I agree. You know what? Bring the other guys back in here, because this to me right now is the most interesting thing happening in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Dan Orlovsky, you made a really good point on this in our meeting this morning that I want you to share about how they're handling their aging quarterback differently than the other teams in the league are.
Yeah, Greeny, a month ago I told you there was 5 teams that had aging quarterbacks, and it was going to be important to see what those teams did in the draft, whether they chose the future or the immediate need to go win now. The 5 teams were Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, it was Big Ben, it was Rivers, it was Brady, and then it was Drew Brees. Well, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers filled immediate need. They drafted Tristan Wirfs. And the Saints got Emmanuel Sanders, and they drafted Ruiz. Immediate need. The Rivers, the Colts with Phillip Rivers, they drafted Michael Pittman. Their immediate need. And Pittsburgh drafted Chase Claypool. Their immediate need. The Green Bay Packers did not fill an immediate need in either free agency or the draft. Out of those five teams, they're the only one that chose the future rather than filling the immediate need for their aging quarterback right now to make their one final run. We don't need to listen anymore to what anything gets said out of Green Bay. Their actions showed us that they chose the future rather than the present, while those four other teams decided we're going to fill that immediate need to go make one more run with our aging quarterback.
It's an excellent point. And, Nick, it makes even less sense when you consider that of those, Rodgers is the youngest of the five quarterbacks that we're talking about and seems to have as much, if not more, left in the tank than any of the other guys that we're talking about. It just makes no sense at all.
Yeah, he's the youngest and he's the probably the most talented. It doesn't make any sense. And that team was the closest. So it makes no sense. And I just love to build on what Dan said a little bit. Not only was it immediate need, it was to help those quarterbacks. Like, it was offensive players that would help protect those quarterbacks and help get open for those quarterbacks. They drafted a running back who doesn't even have much, who isn't even much of a receiving threat necessarily, when they already had a young running back who was a very good receiver. So it doesn't make any sense other than they're trying to send a message. And this is the wrong way to go about it, especially with a guy who we know is as smart and as in touch with his emotions as Aaron Rodgers. He's not a normal football player, and to treat him as such just doesn't make sense to me. And I think Mr. Tannenbaum has been killing it so far this segment with his jokes and also coming over the top on the Packers and saying that was one of the worst decisions they could make. I love it, Mr. T. Go hard.
Yeah, and Mike, I'd like you to expand on that thought as well, because it's not only that they don't help Aaron Rodgers. But let's go to the other side of it. We know there's nothing in the sport more valuable than having a good quarterback on his rookie deal. At this point, looking at at what is remaining on Aaron Rodgers' contract, they will have almost none of Jordan Love on his rookie deal on the field.
That's exactly right. I think it's a lazy narrative to compare when Aaron Rodgers was drafted for Brett Favre as it is with now Jordan Love for Aaron Rodgers. That's exactly right, because Brett was indicating that he was close to the end and wanted to leave. They just signed Aaron Rodgers to a new contract, so Jordan Love has one, maybe 2 years under the rookie deal. So, again, the timing is way off. And I agree with what Neek said from a standpoint of Green Bay was in the Final Four. It is so hard to get there, guys. They were in the Final Four. This was historically deep in terms of the draft at wide receiver, and they didn't even get one. So it really makes no sense, again, from a timing standpoint. I understand depth at quarterback. It's critically important. It just wasn't the right time on this contract.
Yeah, and so, Orlovsky, I'll give you another thing that I think is something of a lazy narrative or a lazy conversation. People say, well, how's Aaron going to treat Jordan Love based upon the way Brett Favre treated him? I don't know that that's really the key here. I don't think that's what's important. What's important is if Aaron Rodgers, if the quarterback has an adversarial relationship with the head coach, is that a situation that can work under any circumstances?
No, we have so much data and evidence in the NFL that it won't work. And not only will it not work for success, like, you know, get to that Final Four, like Mike T is pointing, and potentially the Super Bowl, but it's just not going to work in day-to-day life. I mean, no quarterback wants to go into their meeting room and have conflict with their head coach, to not see things the same way as their head coach, to have that hanging over their head. I mean, just imagine this. Let's just imagine that we're 3 or 4 games into the season next year, and the Packers offense is struggling, and Aaron Rodgers is, no one's getting open, and Aaron Rodgers isn't playing big time football, and everyone's going to go, what's wrong? And Aaron Rodgers is going to be sitting there going, what do you mean what's wrong? You guys took Jordan Love and a pound the rock tailback, and we don't have receivers that can get open. And so that is going to be, this is the genesis, but that is just going to be the, you know, everything getting heaped on top is going, I'm the guy out on the field right now, and I don't have anybody to throw the football to, and you're asking me what's wrong? You know, You guys were the ones who made this decision to go draft for the future. And so that's where you're going to get all of this conflict going on. And so, no, I do not think this ends well. Aaron Rodgers sits there and watches all these, I've said this before, watches all these young coordinators have a ton of fun plays for their quarterbacks. He even said it when they were playing San Francisco. I want to play in an offense like that. So now he's going to sit back and go, wait, Brady got all these weapons, and Rivers got all these weapons, and Roethlisberger has all these weapons, and Brees has all these weapons and you guys got me nothing. You got me nothing. He's going to sit there and go, I got nothing left for you.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the only thing I would add is not only is it not going to end well, it's also not going to end soon. There's nothing they can do about it contractually. So this thing is going to last. All right, as we continue, where will Cam Newton play next year? Will he be a starter or a backup? I'll explain exactly why those are such difficult decisions to make. Plus, one might think Lamar Jackson is the best quarterback taken in the NFL draft since 2018. Dan Orlovsky isn't so sure. Wait till you see his list this morning. Get up, ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and one of the really big unanswered questions in the NFL remains about that man. Cam Newton, still a free agent. The Panthers released him last month after 9 seasons with the team, replacing him with Teddy Bridgewater. And so the questions now are, exactly where does this go from here for a quarterback who I think is vastly underappreciated? Cam Newton has been league MVP more recently than Aaron Rodgers and been to the Super Bowl more recently than Russell Wilson, and he's younger than either of them. How often is a quarterback like that available to the highest bidder? He is also just 18 months removed from playing MVP caliber quarterback. Midway through the 2018 season, he had 19 touchdowns, 4 turnovers, and 2,235 total yards. Those are better numbers than when he actually was the MVP 3 years before, and his team was 6-2. Then he got hurt, a big hit to the shoulder, and he did what football players do. He tried to play through it. But the second half of the season was a disaster, and sometimes it feels as though the world just forgot how good he was. The Panthers certainly did. Cam is right now the only player with a current franchise record in both passing and rushing touchdowns, and still, they showed him the door in a manner that can kindly be described as less than appreciative.
You could have let him go earlier. You screwed him over as an organization.
Never known anything other than the Carolina Panthers.
Cam's first 8 years in the league, he accounted for 240 touchdowns. Only Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady had more during that stretch. And he did it despite not playing with a single Pro Bowl receiver after Steve Smith his rookie year. Plus, he missed just 5 games total during those 8 seasons. So, why does no one seem to want that guy?
Bring in the suggestion box, and I want your suggestions to be in that suggestion box, because I sure don't know.
Because that's only half the story.
Can Cam throw? That's the question.
Is he healthy?
This is one of the most fascinating free agency situations for a player that I can ever recall.
The other half includes the 14 games he missed last year, the 2 surgeries on his throwing shoulder, the foot sprain that cost him almost all of 2019, and most of all, the 1,318 times he's been hit since he came into the league in 2011. That's nearly 10 times a game. No other quarterback is within 200 of that total during that span.
I see the hits on Cam. Cam doesn't get these calls.
And it's been really taking the fun out of the game for me.
Couple all of that with teams' inability to get him with their own medical staffs and the Panthers' decision to move on with seemingly very little hesitation, the picture becomes more clear. Cam Newton is going to have a second act, but where and when are questions that figure to go unanswered for quite some time to come. So here we are after the draft. Dan Orlovsky, where does it go from here, and what do you expect Cam Newton to bring whatever team signs him?
Well, first of all, we know that there are no starting quarterback jobs open, right? So that the option for Cam to sign on and be someone's starter is zero. So Cam's got to go, where is the best place for me to go to sit in the backup role, but potentially have the opportunity to get on the field and prove I'm healthy and still the capable player? There's like five or six teams that you could make a justifiable case that they should be calling Cam Newton. The Denver Broncos have a young quarterback, but just in case. You could say the Tennessee Titans. You could say the Pittsburgh Steelers. You could say the Seattle Seahawks. You could say the Dallas Cowboys, because we don't know what's going to happen with Dak. And also, these teams are playoff caliber football teams. Tennessee and Pittsburgh and Seattle and Dallas, they're all playoff teams. And you don't want to miss the playoffs because of the one game your starter may miss that you don't have a good, viable winning option. And so I don't know where it's going to end. It should be one of those teams that goes, I don't want to make the mistake of not having the right guy for that one game that we need him. And that could be the difference between the one seed and the six seed.
Nick, how confident are you that that's the way Cam Newton views himself right now?
Yeah, I certainly don't think he views himself that way, but it doesn't matter necessarily. But I disagree with Dan in that there aren't any starting jobs available. I think New England, that job is still available. I think Cam may not end up there because they don't have the cap space. But I disagree with the idea that he doesn't fit that system. Josh McDaniels won games with Tim Tebow as his quarterback. There's smart coaches out there in New England. They'll find a way to build around that talent. If Cam Newton really wants to reestablish his value, and it sucks that he ends up in his position, but he might need to take a really drastic pay cut and go to that situation where he can actually start for a whole season. I don't think there's anywhere else that he can start for a whole season except for in New England.
Go ahead, Danny.
Dom, I think your point to New England is valid, and the point of Tebow is a great point, and it brings me back to my kind of one of my more important questions for Cam is, are you willing to still be a runner? Because to your point, McDaniels right. did win with Tebow, but he had Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas on the outside, and he was used as a runner. Tebow was still a runner, and so if Cam's willing to continue to be right. a 100-carry guy for the season, cool. We could talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason to suggest that he's not. He hasn't said anything. He hasn't behaved any way to suggest that he's not. But in New England, they don't have any weapons. Who's a quarterback who is more accomplished with limited weapons around him than Cam Newton? It seems like Cam Newton is the type of flexible, talented guy that allows you to cut corners in other places, which is what it seems like Bill Belichick likes to do. He likes to find some guys that are flexible and unique and then save money on the defensive side of the ball with the front, save money on the offensive side of the ball with receivers because Tom Brady is so efficient. Like, it seems like Cam may not fit in the traditional way that you think about a quarterback, but he fits in the way that the Patriots like to build a team.
And I would add quickly, Dan, that the idea of Cam running the football, it's one thing for him to be willing. It's another thing for him to be able at this stage with all the hits that he's taken in his career. We have more quarterbacks to talk about as we continue. Are Tua and Burrow the best quarterbacks taken in the last three NFL drafts? Dan Orlovsky has made a list. You're not going to want to miss it next. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
With the first pick in the 2020 draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrow. And I hope that
you're ready. He goes from a Bayou Bengal to a Cincinnati Bengal.
It's a dream come true.
So he is truly the Tiger King. I'ma say it again, man. Yeah. You better get ready.
So Joe Burrow last week became the third consecutive number one overall pick to win the Heisman Trophy, play quarterback, come into the NFL. We've seen so many quarterbacks taken in the last three drafts. So, Dan Orlovsky, we have asked you to put together a fundamental list. If you were drafting these guys, the top five, your top five quarterbacks drafted in the last 3 years.
Greeny, I'll start with number five. I'm going to go Lamar Jackson. Obviously, Lamar Jackson coming off of his MVP season proved to us that he is way more than just the runner that some people thought he was. He's actually a very good thrower of the football, one of the better throwers from the pocket last year. I would draft Lamar at number five. Number four, I would go Tua Tagovailoa. I think it's been well documented how good of a player I think Tua is going to be. If Miami handles him the right way, he should be one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL for the next 10-plus years. Number three, Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray was remarkable last year. Offensive Rookie of the Year. Threw for like 3,700 yards, 20 touchdowns, a QBR of 88, 65-plus percentage on your completion percentage, and he's only got more weapons this year. Number two, I would go Joe Burrow, the first pick of this year's draft. I mean, obviously, Joe Burrow being so instinctual and reactionary, such poise and patience in the pocket, sees the field so well. I've said he's going to be a bona fide rock star. And I would still take old Sam Darnold number one. And this is why. Everything that I talk about when it comes to Joe Burrow, the accuracy, the anticipation, creativity, instincts, reactions, all that stuff, Sam Darnold has. He just does it with a stronger arm. And so that's why, building for the future, this is a draft for the future, I'd take Sam Darnold number one still.
Well, keep talking. You're doing great. I'm just thoroughly delighted by all of this. Against my better judgment, they're telling me I need to... I need to bring in Dominique to disagree with you. I don't want any part of that.
Bring him in.
All right, Neek. So let's go ahead. Why don't you? I'm just sitting here basking in the glow. Go ahead, Neek.
You don't need me to disagree. Everyone at home is yelling at their screen and throwing things. This is absurd. Like, Dan, let me be honest with you. Greeny likes you. He'll be your friend even if you don't come on TV and make up lies. Somehow Sam Darnold, and you're basing, is there some fine print to this? Like, what are you basing this off of? You aren't basing it off of production within the NFL. You aren't basing it off of college career. You're basing it off of wanting Greeny to be your buddy. He'll take you to dinner without you kissing up to him.
Can I mute Neek just out of curiosity? I don't have the Tony Reale function. Let's talk for a minute here. Go ahead, Dan. Hold on a second. Let's talk about what we're actually doing. We're not talking about what they've been. We're talking about how you would draft them and how you would thus project them. So what is it you like so much about Darnold?
Everything. I mean, I've talked about his ability to make these throws when his feet aren't set, and he's got this creativity with his arm. It's kind of, and I've talked with Daniel Jeremiah about this, it's kind of like in the NBA, there's scorers and there's shooters. This guy is a scorer. He can create his own type of shot, get to the rim whenever he wants. His athleticism, everything that we talked about with Joe Burrow and his athleticism and his creativity, Sam Darnold has. He's got a stronger arm, and so it's this projection. Dom, I knew you were going to come on here. And I knew you were going to say what you were going to say, and I knew you were going to and ask me how I can say Sam Darnold's number one. And this is why. Last year, in the midst of a new head coach for the second one in 2 years, and a new general manager, and a new offense, he was 7-6 as their starting quarterback with his illness that he dealt with last year. Last year, you know who had the worst pass-blocking offensive line in football? Sam Darnold. You know who had the worst run-blocking offensive line in football? The New York Jets. So you're talking about a quarterback that has to do it on his own. He's 7-6 last year, has a good season when his second leading receiver outside of Crowder is a tailback. So you mean to tell me that if Sam Darnold is on a team that has more weapons, he's not going to light it up? That's why he's number one. Joe Burrow is going to be a rock star in the NFL. Everything that you want at the quarterback spot, that's why he's at two. They're very close, but Sam Darnold has every trait that Joe Burrow has, but a little bit stronger.
You're repeating yourself at this point. At this point, you're a rerun. So first, let me apologize to Daniel Jeremiah, who is a very well-respected evaluator, for you throwing his name in here and somehow suggesting that he also would pick Sam Darnold first out of these quarterbacks the last 3 years. So I'm sorry to Daniel. He does not agree with that. No chance. So I'm not saying that Sam Darnold's not good. He's a very good quarterback, but putting him number one is absurd. You're saying all this stuff, what he would be if he was in a good situation. Why don't we talk about players who were great in good situations? Sam Darnold has yet to be great. There are quarterbacks that are behind him, and there are quarterbacks left off this list that are actually great now. The MVP of the league at 5 and Sam Darnold at 1? You stop it. And then throwing Kyler Murray up there at 3.
Because
Kyler
Murray, it's not a now thing, Dom.
I understand that. So it's not a now thing. What are you basing it off of? You're basing off of what they're going to be. I understand that. We've seen these people, these players, be great already. You're putting a guy out there who has never been great. He wasn't great in college. He's not great in the NFL. He has the potential in the right situation to be great, but he's not great now.
Can I throw something into the conversation? Someone correct me about this in my ear. I think of the five names that you just listed, I think Sam Darnold is the youngest. I actually think he is younger. I know he's younger than Joe Burrow. I think he may actually be the youngest quarterback on that list. Dominique, let me let you go at this. Who would you put number one? Of all the names he just listed or any others who were drafted the last 3 years, who would you put first?
Honestly, I like what Kyler Murray is doing, but I feel like you have to go with the league MVP. He's coming off an MVP-level season. I'm not sure what the fine print is that you're basing this ordering on, but it doesn't make sense. Maybe it's the guys who are named Sam. Is that it?
No, Dan, that's the one thing that I think people will look at the most here, is that Lamar Jackson was the MVP of the league. He had an historically great season, and you have him fifth. Why?
And you could make all those excuses you made for Sam Darnold, you could make for Lamar Jackson. He didn't have the receivers that he needed necessarily.
Go ahead. Explain why. Why is he fifth?
No, okay. Again, this is a thing for the next 10 years, and this is my only caveat. I've got two things with Lamar. As great as Lamar is, and I was one of the people who said he was going to be great, once you go all in like the Ravens did with Lamar, it minimizes your roster flexibility in some ways. Like, you have to have very specific linemen. You have to have specific skill players. You have to have a very specific backup quarterback that does the same type of things. Wait, Dom. So that does, it makes it hard on an organization, I would imagine. And two, if anything that we've learned about the quarterback spot over the last year, it's those hits add up. We saw it with Luck, and we saw it with Cam Newton. And so, you know, Lamar is taking, just running the football, over 300 hits in his first 2 years. So
I don't
get concerned that
you.
It will add up and become a conversation in 5 or 6 years.
Go ahead, Nate.
I don't disagree with you that having Lamar is a little bit of a risk because he takes some hits, but throwing the ball to the other team is also a risk, which Sam Darnold does. And I would disagree with you by saying that because you're looking for a unique set of players, that somehow that's a disadvantage. You are not in a competitive negotiating market if you are the only team looking for this type of player. That is actually an advantage. If you are the only team that's looking for a certain type of player, you have the leverage to negotiate lower contracts and build a better team. That is an advantage. If you are the only team that is running the ball and playing football in a certain type of way and teams don't prepare for you, that is an advantage. Saying that like that's some sort of disadvantage makes no sense to me. The only criticism of Lamar is you've yet to see him be able to kind of come back in late situations, but he's only in his second season. He's just coming off his second season. And somehow Sam Darnold is ahead of him? Stop it.
I will not stand for that. Jalen Rose is coming up next, and I'm told he's freaking out. But by the way, go ahead, Jalen, go.
Come on, Jay.
Maybe we did hit the mute button on Jalen. Let's see if we can get Jalen's audio on. Go ahead.
Dan, did I just hear you say that Tua was going to be one of the top three quarterbacks in this draft, the last three drafts over the next 10 years, but you said my Detroit Lions shouldn't take him? I just hear that?
You heard me.
Okay, so why isn't he on this list,
Jalen,
number one?
And that was the
right pick. Hold on. You know how much I love you. Number two, first off, we is not about to let Kyler Murray, who I love, who just got Hopkins, and Tua, who should redshirt this year, for some reason every team wants to get a quarterback because it's a backup quarterback. It's kind of important in the NFL. Ask the Green Bay Packers, ask the Philadelphia Eagles, but for some reason the Lions can't get one. When did all of these guys leapfrog Lamar Jackson?
Okay,
is that deal.
I have to leave it there because, Jalen, we have
to.
This argument is not going to end.
The argument.
And I'm definitely never going to win it. Let me just say very quickly that the oldest quarterback on that list is Joe Burrow.
Put some respect on Lamar Jackson's name.
Burrow is the oldest of the group that we just mentioned. Meanwhile, tomorrow night on ESPN, we have legendary college football games for you. We go back to the 2016 Michigan-Ohio State game. Buckeyes in overtime against their arch rivals. It's tomorrow night at 7 on ESPN and the ESPN app. All right, the reason we have Jalen coming up. LeBron James did not go to college. We all understand he didn't have to. Now they have to, unless they don't. This may all be changing today. We'll explain why next.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Today could wind up being a very significant day in sports. To set it up, I will tell you about this young man. His name is Dacian Nix. He's a five-star point guard who was decommitted from UCLA to sign with the NBA's new G League Pathway program. He is the third top prospect to join the G League this offseason, including, you see, Jalen Green there. He could very easily wind up being the number one pick in the draft. And so these three guys have chosen to go to the G League rather than play in college. Now, as we speak, and so I'm literally trying to read through this wire copy as we go here. I've just been handed a story. The NCAA is doing a conference call in which they are explaining some of the recommendations that came from this this committee they put together on how they're going to go forward when it comes to name, image, and likeness. Jalen Rose is with me here as one of the most famous collegiate athletes of all time. Jalen, let me just read this to you as I'm going through it as fast as I can. The NCAA said today that it supports a proposal to allow college athletes to sign endorsement contracts and receive payments for other work, provided the schools they attend are not involved in any of the payments. They say they will allow athletes to appear in advertisements, but they would not be allowed to reference the school they attend or use any of the school's logo or branding in the advertisements. Now, again, it's a long story. It's literally happening as we speak, and I can't bring it all to you here. But Jalen, just off the top of your head, those two things don't feel coincidental to me, that all of a sudden all these players are leaving college and are skipping college. They're going to play in Australia. Now they're going to the G League. Now the NCAA is reacting. What is your reaction?
The financial dominance and empire of the NCAA over its athletes is steady crumbling. And I graduated from high school in 1991, Greeny, and I remember before I ever had my first practice, a couple of teammates and I went to an appearance, got paid for the appearance. I actually thought I was going to get cash. The gentleman gave me a check. I'm looking like, what am I going to do with this? I don't even have a checking account. To make a long story short, we ended up being investigated in theory about doing a paid appearance. Now you graduate 30 years, finally, NCAA players will actually be allowed to be paid for their likeness. And also, as you mentioned, players going from high school to the G League, that's just getting you closer to your goal. To me, that can now serve as almost like a red shirt season for those that don't want to be on a path to graduate from college. And that's just fine. And so you play basketball for a living. You become a part of the NBA infrastructure and the coaching. I just now hope that as you get to the money younger, you also are getting the nurturing, the support, the life skills, the financial literacy that's going to come with the things that you're going to have to be able to juggle as an entrepreneur and as a leader of your situation off the floor. So I applaud that these steps are now being taken, and it now took players going overseas to get top dollar, as you see guys like LaMelo Ball who are going to come into the NBA. Take players like Jalen Green to sign a letter of intent. A couple of players signed the letters of intent and then still decided to go to the G League. So when the G League got up their money, shout out to Sharif Abdul-Rahim and the NBA and Adam Silver for finding a different pathway for their players who don't feel like going to college is something they want to do after high school.
I'm reading through this as much as I can. Jalen, let me read you two, and for everyone, let me read you two other pieces of this. The recommendations include significant changes to current restrictions while also leaving room for the NCAA and schools to regulate what kind of deal athletes might be allowed to sign in the future and the monetary value of those deals. I see the smile on your face. The skepticism is obvious, and it is warranted. I will also read you this paragraph. These are recommendations, I should say. They're not guaranteed to remain the same in the 9 months before NCAA leaders are expected to vote on new rules, but they would represent the most significant step forward to date in a long debate over college athlete compensations. So of those things I just read to you, what stands out to you?
Well, one word that is going to be a sticking point is regulate. And the other word that I didn't hear is actually pay these student athletes, as they're called, to play their sport. That's the disconnect. Now, this top players going from high school to the G League and or overseas and eventually to the NBA, because that's what's going to happen in a couple of years, is not going to stop collegiate sports from happening. The thirst for that is still going to happen. College basketball at an elite level is still going to be played. We're still going to be excited about the NCAA brackets and the Final Four. That's still going to be happening. The difference is the top level prospects, instead of going to college, are not going to be going to play in the professional ranks. So it just creates other options for young people, and they deserve that because they're very talented.
I will quickly say the notion of actually paying players a salary is definitively not suggested here in these recommendations. I'm told Jay Will, there he is. Jay Will is with us this morning as well. Jay Will, I the floor is yours. I'm dying to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, first off, you know, I commend Adam Silver and what they're doing in the G League to get these players, because they're also allowing them to have an education. But hey, let's call it for what it is, too, because I want to put this in perspective, Greeny and Jay Rose. You know, basketball and football, these athletes are a microcosm of society. We also know a lot of individuals that went to school, not for the education component, but for the network that the school provided or to get a job, right? So it's the same for these student athletes to a degree. So as much as, you know, I hear guys, and I love him, he's my boy, John Calipari, say things like, hey, we're going to have thousands of guys that are just going to be lost due to this new system and going to be trying it. Yes, this is called a free market. That's what it should be. Kids should have the optionality. They have the optionality to make millions of dollars on YouTube. Okay, fine-tune your craft. And I also think that we're going to see a lot of kids start looking at their craft. I mean, how many people do you know, Jay Rose, that went to school and then actually that education translated to what they ended up having a career in? It doesn't really go that way. A lot of people have a network. So if Adam Silver and company are providing a network for these kids to earn right out of the gate, why wouldn't you allow that? Why wouldn't that be praised? And now all of a sudden we're seeing the NCAA try to say, hey, well, now we're going to try to, you know, expedite name, image, and likeness. This is what it should have been 5 years ago. They're just behind the eight ball once again. And I agree with you, Jay Rose. Like, yeah, football and basketball, those two sports, I understand Title IX, they handle payment for other sports. But like, it's time that we recognize that and you give some kind of sort of salary to athletes if they're paying that kind of load for the rest of the school, if they're, you know, they're carrying the rest of the school on their back, you know, financially for the rest of the other sports.
Jalen,
it's just what it is, Greeny. It's where we are currently.
I'm going to run out of time. There's one question I feel like I really need to ask Jalen here, because you were a member of one of the most famous college basketball teams that ever played. If this pathway that the G League, the NBA is creating right now existed, do you think there would have been a Fab Five?
Not at all. Because no. Chris Webber and or Jerron Howard definitely would have been ready for the pros. Me personally, I was going to college. And that's what leads me to say this. You still won't hear young people in their backyards at 6, 7 years old saying 3, 2, 1, I can't wait to make it to the G League. They're still going to be saying, I want to make it to the NBA. Zion Williamson's contract is $44 million. That's greater than $500,000. So we still need to get that pathway from players to go from high school to college. And also for players out there, success means longevity. Best of luck on your journey.
That's really well said. I could do this forever. Literally, the story is developing as we go. We'll do much more on this tomorrow. Guys, thank you very much. Meanwhile, coming up, First Take follows us. We've been talking all morning long about the disrespect the Packers have shown Aaron Rodgers. You'll hear why Stephen A. thinks they made a huge mistake. First Take is next on ESPN. Back on Get Up, where we started this morning talking about Jameis Winston and the Saints. Their deal is official. It's a one-year contract. Jameis Winston will come and be the backup to Drew Brees this season in New Orleans, with Taysom Hill also in that quarterback room. It's a fascinating dynamic and a fascinating opportunity for Jameis to sort of rebuild his career. So, Dan Orlovsky, if you will, what specifically do you think Jameis can take from Drew Brees that he will learn and help him to cut down on all his interceptions?
Yeah, getting rid of the panic throws in his game. And the reason why Drew Brees doesn't have panic throws is if you ever watch Drew warm up, like, he will teach his body muscle memory of where his next option is. He'll come out and throw a ball to the right in the warm-ups, and then you'll watch his body go to number two and number three and number four in his progressions. So when the live bullets are happening and number one's not there, he's already trained his body to get to two and three and four, trained his eyes to get there, and that forces him to never have these panic throws. Jameis doesn't have that in his game. So if he can watch Drew Brees and learn that from him and then implement it into his game, you will see a massive jump for Jameis Winston in his performance, mainly with his greatest flaw, the panic throws.
That's fascinating to me. So, Dominique, how do you project this? Again, Jameis Winston is 26 years old. He's had great moments in the NFL. He's also had really bad ones, and frequently they come in consecutive series, and that's really the problem. Yeah. What do you think happens with him from here?
The more I think about this, the more I think this was an ingenious move by the Saints, because not only do they have some insurance in their quarterback this year, they get an opportunity to audition Jameis Winston to be their future quarterback for cheap, and if it doesn't work out, they find out in practice that he's not improving. They've established themselves and kind of furthered that reputation as a spot for wayward quarterbacks. The next time someone like this is available, they'll pick them up, and they still have the opportunity to draft somebody. This is how you kind of set up a transition without hurting your present, and you kind of set up your future. This is the right way to do it, the best possible way to do it. And I do think Jameis Winston could potentially thrive there, and I would put my money on him being the quarterback of the future for the Saints.
Me too. I think when this is all said and done, Brees plays one more season. If Winston plays his cards right, he could then slide into that position and wind up being there for a decade. I think this was a win-win for both sides. Guys, to both of you, thank you very much. Outstanding day today. If there's one thing I think we learned, we can all agree on, Sam Darnold is the best quarterback in the National Football League. A lot of fun. Thank you to all the medical professionals. Thank you to all the first responders. Thank you to everybody making our lives better right now. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts next.